Okay. I'm going to call the meeting back to order. We have an update on the Accessibility Act. Dawn Stegan and Terry Lynn Almeida. Do I probably muffled that?
Anyway. No, you did perfect.
I apologize.
You did perfect.
Awesome. I apologize for being so behind. I thought skipping around the agenda was a good idea.
It was a good discussion.
Awesome. Go ahead.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity to be here today and to meet with you about government's update on our work toward becoming an accessible province by 2030. I'm Terry Lynn Almeida. I'm the manager at the Accessibility Directorate, and I especially appreciate the opportunity to be here because I grew up in Lunenburg. My grandfather's family is from Corkum's Island. My mom worked at the Lunenburg detachment of the RCMP. My grandfather worked at the foundry, and my grandmother just celebrated her 100th birthday last year in Lunenburg, still living at home. And I live here in the municipality down in Green Bay, so really appreciate being here. But I was one of those Nova Scotians who moved out west for a number of years. I spent 25 years in Alberta, working both in nonprofit and in government on programs and policies for seniors, youth, and persons with disabilities. And about 5 years ago, I was really excited to have this opportunity to move back home, be closer to family, and work with the Accessibility Directorate. I'm so proud to be part of the work that we're doing. But it was not uneventful. After just 1 week on the job, I became disabled myself after a car accident on my way to the Lehigh Ferry. And then 3 years ago, my younger brother died by suicide. We never knew that he had mental health challenges. And I don't say that for sympathy. I say that to remind ourselves that disability can happen to anyone at any time. And that's why the work that you're doing here at the municipality and that we're doing collectively across government is so important. And so I really appreciate being here today to talk to you, and I'm pleased to introduce our Executive Director, Dawn Stegan.
Thanks, Terry Lynn. Good morning, everybody. And I'm not from the South Shore, but a former colleague of mine at Communities, Culture, Tourism, and Heritage, Debbie Smith, used to refer to the beautiful South Shore. So pleased to be back and this beautiful weather today. I also want to just acknowledge Ellen Johnson in the room, the Accessibility Coordinator for the five municipalities in the South Shore. And Ellen is actually a member of the Accessibility Advisory Board, the Nova Scotia Board. So we look forward to walking you through a bit of an update here, and I'll just jump to the next slide. So the Accessibility Act was enacted in 2017, and we were the third province in Canada to enact accessibility legislation. Before us was Ontario and Manitoba. And since then, there really has been a focus on accessibility in the country. We have other provinces that have passed legislation, Newfoundland and British Columbia. As well, we have the federal government that has passed the Accessible Canada Act. And coming behind us, and probably just in the next couple of years, will be New Brunswick and Saskatchewan with legislation. So it really provides us with a great opportunity to be collaborating across the country and sharing information and learning from each other as we do this important work. And I just want to sort of pause a bit and acknowledge that, there's been a lot of work done since 2017, whether you're municipal government or provincial government. It really, 5 years isn't a lot of time, and some big work has already happened. And so just to acknowledge on this slide, we have the release of our strategy for the Act called Access by Design 2030. We have prescribed public sector bodies like MODL launching their accessibility plans, and we have a lot of other work that we're going to provide you with updates on throughout today's presentation. But it's also a good reminder to sort of the work that's been done, but we have so much more to do as well, and to do that together. So let me tell you a little bit about Access by Design. So as I mentioned, it is what we call the framework for the Accessibility Act, and it was required that we develop a framework 1 year after the Act was enacted. And so it was launched in 2018 after consultation around the province. It's sort of our roadmap to how we'll achieve an accessible Nova Scotia by 2030. And it includes six priority areas, which will become the theme of our presentation and the update this morning. So standard development is top of mind and a priority, along with awareness, collaboration, compliance and enforcement, monitoring and evaluation, and Government of Nova Scotia leading by example. So a multi-pronged approach to achieving accessibility in every element is important. So this is gives you a bit of an overview of our standard development graph. And so hopefully on your screen you can see it, all the pieces of it. So it describes the six standard areas. So the first priority in Access by Design is standard development. And so this is about changing laws. So it could be amendments to the building code or enacting new regulation under the Accessibility Act to help us meet our goal of an accessible Nova Scotia by 2030. The standards are regulations, and so what you see here is six areas. These are the six priorities identified in the Act, and these are the priorities of where there are barriers. And so by creating regulation and changing legislation, we can help achieve accessibility. So our goal here is to have the built environment standard enacted in 2024. So there is an implementation plan in development, and I'll talk a little bit about that in terms of when would it apply to municipalities and other entities. We have the education standard, which is specifically for pre-primary, right up to career colleges. Hope to have that enacted by 2025. And then sort of every year after that, we have the other standards coming into play: employment, goods and services, transportation, and communication. So really this is what Accessible Nova Scotia by 2030 means. We would have all six standards enacted, but the journey doesn't stop there. There's so much more to do. As well, there's really no finish line. We could enact the built environment standard in 2024, and we'll be contemplating what does the next piece of work for the built environment look like, as well as should we be considering other standard areas, whether it be around housing or healthcare. So always standards is an ongoing piece of work. Nope. I'll just...
Can you go back a slide?
Yes, I can, yeah.
I guess I'm looking at that 2024 with the built environment.
Yeah.
Can you explain that one again?
I've got a slide coming up in a few minutes to tell you about that. Yeah. Good question. So this one is another graphic that sort of describes our process. And this is how we develop standards. It's a 12-step process, and a lot of the elements are actually defined in the Act. And so there are steps that we must follow. So really what we have is a collaborative process with First Voice involved throughout the process. And First Voice is persons with disabilities, disability organizations, as well as impacted sectors, including municipalities and villages and others, and Government of Nova Scotia at the table. So it all begins with the Accessibility Advisory Board, which would be sort of step one, forming a standard development committee. And usually it takes around 2 years for a standard development committee to bring recommendations forward to government. And so in terms of where you would see that milestone is around step five. Step five, six is when recommendations come into government. So we're at the table with the impacted sectors, with persons with disabilities, developing recommendations. And then from there, minister or government receives the recommendations. They're posted publicly. They're not changed at all. And government determines what do we do with those recommendations to then create the standard. Do we accept the recommendation, make it into regulation? Do we amend it or not accept it? And so we then sort of go on a process of step six to step 12, which takes around 2 years as well. So the step that we're at, and I'll probably be jumping ahead here, but for built environment, for example, which is our first standard, we're at the place of government preparing the draft standard, implementation plan, and compliance plan, and gearing up to post it publicly. So we're at step 8, 9, and that's the first one coming forward. And I'll just give a little bit more detail on built environment and the other standards, I think, here. So this will give you a sense of kind of where we're at with the standards. So the built environment standard is the first one that we expect to be enacted. The recommendations were submitted to Minister, and government has been working, as I've said, for a couple of years now, since 2021, on developing that standard. What I can tell you about it is that it includes a set of regulations that will fall under the Accessibility Act, but the majority of the work that we're recommending will be amendments to the building code. So that means what will come forward for feedback with the public, because there's an opportunity to consult for 60 days before it's enacted, will be a go-forward sort of standard. So it will be about major renovations and new builds for the most part. There will also be some recommendations for policies and guidelines. So we'll have sort of three elements to the standard: amendments to the building code, around 30 standalone regulations, and some guidelines and policies that will not be enforceable but will be important sort of best practice. The next step for the built environment standard. Oh, sorry.
So again, I would like to go back
yes.
to that.
Okay.
And originally, when the Accessibility Act was declared, they had said that government buildings, government agencies, whatever, had until I'm not sure what the year was to become fully accessible.
So there's been a bit of sort of confusion there. The language has been the Nova Scotia will be an accessible province by 2030, not fully accessible, and sort of treated as an aspirational goal. So how we've interpreted that in the Act is that what Nova Scotia will have is the six standards enacted and a compliance mechanism wrapped around it. But it may not.
But it doesn't mean those buildings are going to be accessible.
It doesn't mean that every building will be accessible by 2030. What I can tell you is our goal at the Directorate is that the first built environment standard will focus mainly on amendments to the building code, like other provinces have done, but that we are already looking ahead in a few years to working with our jurisdictions across Canada on a standard that would be about retrofits and how to address retrofits in historic buildings in the province.
Okay. Not all are historic buildings.
No.
And
no.
There are a lot of buildings, I'm finding out quite quickly, that are not accessible. to open a door mm-hmm. is a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that even after we built this building, we added some interior buttons to ours simply because you couldn't get through them. But unless you're disabled in some form or another, you don't know that. You automatically reach for the door handle and you open it, and you assume that that's the way it was. I know in our old building, we ended up taking doors off and renovating bathroom stalls and everything else when someone broke their leg. But we didn't know it. It was a staff member, and to navigate the office at that time, that's what had to happen.
Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
So I guess I'm just looking, when we say new builds in the building code, mm-hmm. yes, but there's a lot more buildings already here than what there will be being built probably.
For sure.
And yes, we do have to address the go forward as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess my understanding was that we were going to try to meet that. So if I'm looking at some of our current infrastructure that we have, I'll use our Mark property as an example. That statement that you've made has changed what I'm thinking has to happen to that.
Well, and go ahead, Terry.
I was just going to say, of course, we encourage any municipality
yeah.
and ourselves to do more. Right? To do more than what would be the minimum standard for going forward. There's always the opportunity to do more, as you have already done,
mm-hmm.
given that it's beyond what the requirements are as it is. But in terms of what we're anticipating that standard would be, it would be around major renovations and new builds, and primarily related to the building code and some additional accessibility regulations. So appreciate when this act first came in, and Jerry Post hired me.
Yep.
Jerry Post would have, not surprising, could have, and I don't recall the wording himself, but could have used the term fully accessible. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what we're trying to do from both a government and from a relationship perspective, and what we're hearing as we develop the first set of standards, and it's in a very collaborative way with all sectors involved, is find that balance between continuing to move toward accessibility and set the clarity around what should be done and what needs to be done, and also balance some of those economic costs associated with it. And so what you'll see in the standard will give the clarity around what would make a building accessible. And so if you're looking to do more, you'll have the information there to be able to do that. But the requirement that when you're looking at what you need to do as a municipality will, unless things change as we go forward, which is always possible, would be for major renovations and new builds. But you'll have the clarity about what you could do if you wish to start to bring other buildings up to par. So, and like Don said, we are going to be working with other jurisdictions around how do we address, and I appreciate your comment, it's not just about the Lunenburg Academy. It's about some of the buildings from, you know, even 10 years ago that were not built with accessibility in mind.
So is it still the case that government buildings are first in line? Or
So in terms of the enactment of the standard, what you'll see this spring, we'll be seeking approval to consult on the proposed standard in the spring or into the summer. It has to be posted for 60 days, and it will include an implementation plan. So Access by Design lays out that the standard must first apply to the government of Nova Scotia, then to prescribed public sector bodies, and then to others. And so others would be businesses and nonprofits, for example. So you'll see those dates as well when you have an opportunity to give comments on the standard in the spring into the summer.
Okay.
So there's some of the stuff that we've just shared with you is also information that still needs to be approved. And so we have a proposed plan that we'll be bringing forward to senior officials to approve that is about a go-forward focus mainly on major renovations and new builds with the timelines. By the time it is out for public consultation, we may have direction to adjust that. But this is sort of the work of nine departments coming together to look at the recommendations that came to us. The other thing that I'll just mention before I pass it over to Terry Lynn is, I've mentioned the implementation there. Late spring we'll be posting and then enactment in 2024. But the other standards are at work as well. There's actually three other standards that we're developing right now. We have the education standard, which I mentioned is more about curriculum or training for professionals in the system, ensuring the accessibility supports are there for the students. That is, the recommendations have just been received by Minister, and now a interdepartmental working group is forming to receive those recommendations and start drafting the standards or the regulations for the next couple of years. We have an employment standard development committee that's busy these days. So again, that's a committee of the Accessibility Advisory Board, and they're working on recommendations. We expect that they will consult on the draft recommendations, not the draft standard, draft recommendations this fall, and then they will come to Minister in February of 2024 for us to begin the work on making those recommendations regulation. We also will be announcing soon that public transportation and transportation infrastructure will be the fifth standard. And by 2025, 2026, we'll begin work on information and communication technology as a standard. So I will pass it over to Terry Lynn now to talk a little bit about the collaboration and the awareness campaign.
Thanks, Dawn. So standards are a key priority, but so are a number of other priority areas in Access by Design. And the second one is awareness and capacity building, because Nova Scotians with disabilities told us that stigma and discrimination is one of the most significant barriers that they face. And we know that it's not just about changing laws and regulations, it's about changing how we collectively view disability. Last year, we launched the first public awareness campaign in Nova Scotia on accessibility. You may have seen the three ads on your, on your local TV station on CBC, Global, and CTV. These feature real Nova Scotians with disabilities. These are not just actors, and they're showing their life at work, at home, and in the community with the theme, Access Includes Everyone. The campaign also includes digital and social media and a new website, accessiblenovascotia.ca, and the images on this slide are from the website and the digital ads.
Now, to increase the diversity of representation of people with disabilities, because with three ads, you can only depict so much, we organized a photography campaign over the last number of months. And that included 10 photo shoot days all around the province, everywhere from Antigonish to Sydney, and Annapolis Royal to Wagamug First Nation, and of course, Bridgewater, Chester, and Liverpool. And so the photograph that you see here, you might recognize the local mall, the bus stop, and we had Nova Scotians, again, with disabilities who were willing to come forward to be a part of this photo shoot and also to profile some of the really good accessibility initiatives that are happening around the province, like the transit. We're going to be evaluating the results of the campaign and starting our plans for the next phase. You can just leave it down. It's all the time. I know. I've still got the walker in the closet because you never know. Collaboration and support is the third priority area in Access by Design, because working collaboratively with public sector bodies and other organizations is so critical. We can't do it alone in government. Public sector bodies were prescribed in two cohorts with plans due either April 1st of last year, like yours, or April 1st of this year. And so congratulations on completing your plan. That's great. We've developed several resources to help support public sector bodies and other organizations to learn about accessibility, and I've just listed some of them here. And we're also developing some new ones. The Accessibility Foundation's training is a new one for us that we're looking to launch to help those who don't really have a good understanding of accessibility or disability and help them have an interactive experience to learn about it. Another approach we're taking is supporting groups of organizations to build capacity. So we have the partnership with AMANS, where we funded an accessibility coordinator for 2 years to work with municipalities and villages and also provide some additional funding to support some projects. And we also provided some funding to two of the university, well, Mount St. Vincent University and Nova Scotia Community College around capacity building. We also support other initiatives to demonstrate accessibility around the province. Now, I know funding is always a concern, and you can't, some things we can do within existing resources, some things we do all need additional funding to support. And so there are a few grant programs that I'm sure you're well aware of that support accessibility specifically. What we're really trying to do over the next 3 years, and you'll notice that this is a commitment in the next, well, the current Government of Nova Scotia Accessibility Plan that was just launched last December, is how we integrate accessibility into other grant programs. Because it's not just about accessibility specifically, but it's how you build accessibility into grant programs for climate change or transportation or other initiatives. And so we're working with government departments on that. And I understand that Holly McClellan, the AMANS accessibility coordinator, when she met with NSFM about the Sustainable Communities Challenge Fund, that she encouraged them to take an accessibility lens to that project as well. Compliance and enforcement is the fourth priority area in Access by Design. And as we look ahead to the enactment of the first standard area, it's important to know that we developed the compliance and enforcement framework collaboratively with all impacted sectors. This framework is now up on our website, and it really is grounded in education and awareness. From the focus, government is looking to support those organizations impacted by the Act and standards in meeting their obligations. And then if those collaborative efforts do not result in compliance, that's when the Act allows us to look at other measures. It's also important to note that because no standards are enacted yet, really, the compliance measures are related to the accessibility plans and committees that are required by prescribed public sector bodies. That really is the only area that we have compliance and enforcement with right now under the Accessibility Act. And so really pleased to share the response. You know, COVID, it's been a challenge for all of us. And the fact that these plans had to be developed through that time period, really appreciate the leadership that municipalities and other public sector bodies have done in completing their plans, including yours. So 84% have completed their plans, 16% have not yet, but have indicated that they'll be done by May 2023, by May of this year. And we've got a couple of others that are having some challenges that we're working with.
Wondering where 70 municipalities came from.
Oh,
because we don't have 70.
Municipalities, towns, and villages. So,
villages.
Sorry, good point. We should have added that on the slide. We'll clarify that going forward. Yes, and I'll tell you, that's been a challenge for us in identifying. The number has fluctuated a couple of times as we get clarity. Evaluation and monitoring is the fifth priority area of Access by Design, because, of course, we want to know the impact of what we're doing. The Act requires the minister to release an annual report on accessibility. We've got the first Accessibility Act review report that will be released in the next month or two. We conduct an annual public opinion research to get an understanding from Nova Scotians on their views of accessibility and how that changes over time. We have 4 years of data now. And we've also just provided grant funding to the Nova Scotia League for Equal Opportunities to develop what we think is the first ever quality of life index for people with disabilities. So that would be a Nova Scotia tool that will allow us to measure impact over the long term. And last but not least, it's absolutely critical that government leads by example. The provincial government made this commitment in the Act, and we were the first public sector body to release our own accessibility plan, and we've just released our second accessibility plan. I brought a few copies today. But we do have a lot more to do. The second plan builds on the foundation from that first plan. There's now 8 priority areas. All government departments are involved, 6 government-wide commitments, and 47 individual and joint commitments. And this plan was developed by a really strong committee of champions from across departments that continue to help us to move forward and implement those. Okay. I didn't speak to all those initiatives, but happy to chat and turn it over to Dawn.
Well, we'll just kind of lead to a wrap-up here, and just want to sort of showcase here the Access by Design timelines. And so the this sort of, again, gives you an overview of the 6 priority areas. So the first half of the slide represents the standards work, which we showed in a previous slide. But what you see here is our commitment to the awareness and capacity building, noting that the awareness campaign kicked off last spring. And then we have the government of Nova Scotia leading by example, where our plan is to be refreshed every 3 years. Then we have prescribed public sector bodies, including municipalities and villages. But there's a whole cohort, too, which Terry Lynn mentioned, which are the regional centers of education, CSAP, some crown corporations, also the IWK, Nova Scotia Health. And so they're noted there that their plans are due coming this April. Then we have compliance and enforcement in the purple, noting the framework was approved in May, and now we're into our 3 year of implementation. And then finally, under monitoring and evaluation, want to note a very important piece of work, which is the Act review. So that Act review began last year. It's an independent review, and the report will be available this spring for everybody to sort of be able to review, and government will then make a response to the report by the end of the calendar year. But the independent reviewer is looking at the Act, looking at the standard development process, and also looking at the board and the directorate and Access by Design and the priorities. And do we have things right, and where can we make improvements? So an important sort of opportunity, milestone for us to do improvement and to sort of pivot as we move forward.
So, I have a question?
Yes.
Councillor Moore?
Maybe I missed it, and maybe I didn't. These standards that are going to be put in place, are they Rick Hansen standards?
So Rick Hansen along... No, they're not Rick Hansen.
Okay.
But we have used the Rick Hansen work,
right,
along with CSA and other information to inform the recommendations and also to inform the regulations and the building code amendments.
Okay.
Because
my understanding that Rick, by building a trail in the park, and I didn't build it, but by trail development and stuff like that, Rick Hansen's level is like way up here. It's top notch.
A gold standard, they often refer to it. Yes, so we definitely partner with Rick Hansen. We're speaking at his conference next week. But again, there's also other sources that we use because sometimes Rick Hansen is superb around mobility disability,
right.
but sometimes misses out on some of the other
right.
sort of
gotcha.
Key ingredients and,
okay.
and aspects. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yep. So anyway, to adjourn, I just wanted to thank you very much. We're pleased to give you an opportunity or to have the opportunity to present to you, but also we're very interested, if we have a few minutes, to learn where, you know, questions you may have or where we could be working collaboratively with you. As Terry Lynn mentioned, we've formed several partnerships. They're not just always at the provincial level. They could be at the community level. I'll just note one that I'm interested in is now that we have so many accessibility plans done by prescribed public sector bodies, we're doing some costing work right now on our standard to better understand what the needs of prescribed public sector bodies would be. But I would love to work with a region or a municipality on costing, getting a sense of their costing of their accessibility plan. So we've received all the plans, but we don't have a sense of potentially what the costing would be, and that would be very helpful for us. We recently did something with the universities that was similar. So, again, I'll just leave that idea, but there could be other conversations you'd like to have with us as well. So thank you.
Do we have any questions or comments? Anyone? Okay. Well, thank you very much for the
thank
presentation.
You. And so we'll
very
leave
informative.
Some of our plans behind.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so we are going, we'll give them a few minutes. Yep. Okay, we'll move down to 9.3.1, the hydrant charge proposed policy. And I believe, Elena, thank you.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. So at the last Finance Committee meeting, we did discuss hydrant charges, and it was recommended that staff come back with some more information on the subject. So currently, the hydrant charges are levied to all properties within 1,000 feet of a hydrant. I did enclose a map on the report, so you could see that. That billing began after the hydrants were installed in 2005, and there was a council motion that discussed how that was going to happen. So it was kind of a phased-in approach, and by the end of the 4 years, it was 100% from a hydrant rate. So in 2010, the Northfield and District Fire Department submitted a letter and cost shared on some of those hydrant costs up to $15,000 over several years. And then in 2015, that fire department determined that it really wasn't financially viable for them to continue because the hydrants were limited in availability and there were some training requirements that were issues around them. So there was never really a policy developed for it. Staff have been billing based on a bylaw, not a bylaw, excuse me, based on a council motion from 2005.
Mayor Balaber-Genson? Go back to that again.
The fire department?
Well, just explain what you just said, because my understanding was that there was.
Yes, they did. They submitted, Northfield and District Fire Department agreed to cost share with on the hydrants, and they did
that. So they did pay towards the infrastructure.
They did for 15. They paid $15,000 over 4 years.
Okay.
And then in 2015, they stopped. They
because
stopped paying.
Because the $15,000 was finished.
The $15,000 was finished. That's
oh, okay.
correct. Yes.
Yeah,
so they
right.
did pay. No, they paid their $15,000 as agreed.
They did pay their dues.
At that time, that's correct. Yes. But we had some discussion here about how
yes.
this all came
no,
about.
No.
So I'm just kind of trying
yeah.
to give you some history. Yeah, yeah. So they did. They paid the $15,000 that they said that they would pay. That is correct. In 2015, they stopped paying, though. They decided that they weren't going to pay anymore. That $15,000 was paid, the amount that they originally agreed to. That's correct. Yes. So staff have been billing based on that council motion. There's within 1,000 feet of a hydrant, every property gets a hydrant fee based on the cost of the hydrant. The hydrant is billed, all the hydrants that we have in place are billed by the Public Service Commission, and they bill the municipality. So what we believe as staff is that there should be a policy around this so that there isn't as much confusion when we discuss the hydrant rate going forward. So budget implications probably will be minimal because we are collecting them from an area rate now. Staff think that an area rate is probably the best way to do it. We certainly could look at just billing the Northfield Fire Department for the entire amount of the hydrants and letting them bill their customers back in the area. However, they would not have an ability to know which properties were within 1,000 feet, which we do. I think that's probably the reason why it was broken out, because properties within 1,000 feet do benefit directly from having a hydrant in the area, whether it be from house insurance or the ability of the department to use the hydrants in case of a fire. So we did lay out several choices, develop a policy to continue to bill the properties within 1,000 feet of the hydrants, or a policy to bill the Northfield Fire Department for the hydrants. We could continue to bill the hydrant rates based on the council motion that we have, or we could discontinue billing the hydrant rates through the general tax and just recover through the general tax rate. It is an alternative, but it's probably not the best alternative. You already recover streetlights and sewers rates based on properties that receive a direct benefit. So that was kind of the reason why we thought it would be better to have a policy in place than for staff to have to remember that there's a council motion from 2005, and that's why we're billing it.
Councillor Hazen?
Thank you. Is it only the Northfield Fire Department that is... Are there only fire hydrants within that fire district? There's no...
The fire hydrants are right here.
Okay.
Yeah, within... the Cookville area and McCullough Road.
Okay, Councillor Bell.
Thank you. Back in 2005, that's 18 years ago, I had said that when a service is put in place in an area, those who receive the direct benefit of it should pay. Today's option 1A, which is in Ms. Wenzel's report, addresses this concern. Even though it is in Northfield Fire Department's district, and they would be the normal company, group, facility that would use this infrastructure, it wouldn't be totally fair to bill those all in Northfield Fire Department because some don't receive the benefit. So I think the option 1A is a very good option. It's billing those individuals that receive the direct benefit. And as she had said in her report, it wouldn't be fair for us to ask Northfield Fire Department to rebuild, if they paid it, have the work of rebuilding. It's easier for us to do it. So in reflection of the message that's coming forth today, I want to say that it addresses everything, I think, that I asked for the other day. So when we originally asked Northfield Fire Department to pay, they paid based on the infrastructure placement. But there is an annual fee, I think, for renting these hydrants from either Bridgewater Service Commission or whoever owns the hydrants.
It's a service commission, that's correct.
So that's what we're really talking about today. And I think this 1A very effectively addresses that. And I fully support staff coming back with this idea for us.
Councillor Statton.
Thank you. Just a couple of questions, if I might. I'm a little confused about this. I understand Northfield is the only fire department that this is involving, and that's for the hydrants in the Cookville area. Am I right in assuming that?
Yes, you are.
Okay. That's good. You know what assuming does sometimes. The billing that comes from the PSC, where do those funds go? To the municipality, or do they go to the Northfield Fire Department?
Those funds.
You said the PSC bills for the hydrants. I'm assuming they're billing the businesses in that Cookville.
No, that's not correct. The PSC bills the municipality of the District of Lunenburg for the hydrants in the district.
Okay.
And then the municipality takes that amount, and we calculate an area rate for all of the businesses and residences within 1,000 feet of the hydrants in this Cookville, McCullough Road area.
So does that balance out? Is there in-and-out, just in-and-out funding, or is there a makeup through the municipality?
No, it's an in-and-out funding, similar, exactly like streetlights.
Okay, thank you.
Mayor Belvergetzen?
Yeah, well, this went back to a bigger discussion around dry hydrants in other areas as well, is where the conversation was, Councillor Bell, when we started this, and whether or not they were being billed effectively. But after receiving the information, we see that they did pay towards the infrastructure as well. So, again, we are just looking at continuing doing what we're doing, but putting a policy in place so that we understand where it's coming from, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Thank you.
Awesome. Councillor Greek, go ahead.
Thank you. So when I'm looking at the agenda and the map and the purple circles, which very hard to see because there's so many, the places, the locations that are close within 1,000 feet for, I don't know, four hydrants, are they billed four times with this policy, or that will all be worked out within the policy?
No, it's only each property would only be billed once because it's based on an assessment per property. So all this map is doing is giving us a location of all the properties that are within that 1,000 feet of any hydrant so that we can make sure we pick them up on the property tax billing.
Okay, thank you. I just didn't want someone paying four times for a rate.
Councillor Statton, do you have another question?
Sorry, I'll put my hand down. No, I'm finished.
Okay, if there's no more questions, I'll ask Councillor Bell to put the motion on the floor.
Thank you. To the Chair and members of the Policy Strategy Committee, I move that the Policy and Strategy Committee direct staff to develop a policy for hydrant charges to start April 1st, 2024, based on option 1A.
Councillor Greek?
Yes.
Councillor Statton?
Yes.
Motion's passed unanimously. So that finishes up our agenda. I just remind everyone we have two workshops following this meeting and a motion to adjourn. Councillor Bell? Second it. Councillor Wynot? All those in favor? Councillor Greek?
Yes.
Councillor Statton?
Yes.
Awesome. Meeting's adjourned.